The city also renewed Israeli strikes on displaced tents in Khan Yunis, killed 3 more Palestinians. The Israeli occupation forces resumed the offensive against Gaza on March 18, breaking a 2-month ceasefire. More than 1,160 civilians have been killed since then. The death toll from the regime's genocide since October 2023 now tops 50,500, with nearly 115,000 others injured. And displaced Palestinians mourn the loss of their loved ones after an Israeli airstrike on a UN building in Jabalia left 22 people dead, including women and children. They say the attack came without any warning and there is no place safe from Israeli airstrikes.
There is absolutely no security here. They dropped a missile from the right side and another from the left side. Without warning, they dropped the 2 missiles without any prior warning. My mom was cooking on fire over there, a child was playing with a scooter in the alleyway, some people were exiting the toilet, others were cooking, people who are totally uninvolved, who have done absolutely nothing against the Israelis. They ended up being bombarded, massacred, left without heads or legs.
This is a clinic, housing young children. It's affiliated with the UN, not Hamas or Fatah. As you can see, the martyrs are young children. They're all young boys and girls. In what way do they have the right to kill them? Targeting the clinic itself, not even outside, hitting the classroom over their heads. Where is the United Nations and where is the world?
What are these crimes of the occupation? What are these crimes? Show it to the entire world. Show it to all of humanity in the world, in the east and west of the earth.
The Israeli regime presses on with its genocidal war on the Gaza Strip as the regime forces displace more Palestinians from Rafah and southern Khan Yunis. Our Gaza correspondent Ahmed El-Najab visited Khan Yunis, where Israeli forces carried out an airstrike last night on an area the regime itself had designated as a safe zone, killing more civilians.
Here in Al-Katiba area in northwestern Khan Yunis, which is included within the so-called safe zone and not far from the infamous Al-Mawasi area, last night the families inside this neighborhood were sleeping and suddenly a massive explosion happened that shook the entire neighborhood. This home, which belongs to Al-Aggad family, was targeted last night, killing the entire family inside this house. Father, the mother, and the 3 little children. But not only that, because of the devastating and massive scale of the bombardment, 2 of the neighbors as well were killed within this airstrike that was carried by the Israeli occupation.
You can see how closely the homes are built here. We were jolted awake by a thunderous blast, only to find the remains of neighbors scattered across the streets. Our neighborhood has already borne the brunt of Israel's aggression, and now, despite being labeled as a safe zone and instructed to be sought refuge here, we are still enduring relentless bombardment.
Until this morning, the families could collect the remains of the family and the neighbors due to this brutal attack that literally turned the family inside this home into pieces. The neighbors are still cleaning the rubble, looking for any of the remains of the family that was killed here.
The attack was so intense that we thought our home had been bombed, but it was our neighbors. We are still clearing the rubble, searching for more remains of the children who were killed alongside their parents here. These innocent people did nothing to deserve such a brutal end. We call on everyone in the world to put an end to this genocide.
This is the situation inside the so-called safe zone, where the occupation is now directing the families in southern Khan Yunis and Rafah to come to. More massacres and more killing is awaiting the families here, who are still subjected to this massive campaign by the occupation that doesn't seem to go any easier on the families here. Ahmed Al-Najjar, Khan Yunis.
The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is on a 4-day trip to Hungary to find an international criminal court arrest warrant over his war crimes in Gaza. Netanyahu was welcomed by his Hungarian counterpart Viktor Orban in Budapest in an official ceremony. Netanyahu's visit comes at the official invitation of the Hungarian Prime Minister. After Netanyahu's arrival, the Hungarian government announced that it will withdraw in the coming days from the International Criminal Court. The ICC arrest warrant against the Israeli Prime Minister was issued last year. It argues that Netanyahu and his former Minister for Military Affairs are guilty of crimes against humanity for depriving Palestinians in the Gaza Strip of food, aid, and deliberately targeting them. Onto other news, the International Criminal Court has denounced Hungary's decision to host Benjamin Netanyahu is under an arrest warrant for Gaza's war crimes. The court said in a statement that Hungary has a duty to cooperate with the body. This, as Hungary said, it will quit the Hague-based court after defying its arrest warrant. Netanyahu's visit and Hungary's ICC exit has drawn condemnations from across the globe. Hamas has called Hungary's withdrawal from the ICC a blatant complicity with a fugitive war criminal and a flagrant violation of international law. The Palestinian Authority has called on the Hungarian government to immediately hand Netanyahu over to bring justice, to bring him to justice. Germany said Netanyahu's visit was a bad day for international law. Human rights groups have also slammed the visit, calling it a cynical attempt to undermine the ICC. Germany armed forces have shot down another advanced U.S. drone as it was violating the country's airspace.
The Yemeni armed forces' air defenses, with the help of Allah Almighty, were able to shoot down an American MQ-9 drone while it was carrying out hostile missions in the airspace of Hudaydah Governorate. The drone was downed with a locally made surface-to-air missile. This is the second our air defenses have shot down in 72 hours and the 17th during the Battle of the Promised Victory and the Holy Jihad in support of Gaza.
Yahya Seri said the Yemeni military has also targeted the U.S. aircraft carrier USS Harry Truman and other warships in the Red Sea with cruise missiles and drones. He said the operation achieved its objectives. Seri said the Yemeni army's operation will continue until the regime's genocide against the oppressed Palestinian people in Gaza stops and the siege of the territory is lifted. He added that U.S. warplanes launched 36 overnight airstrikes on different parts of Yemen, including Sana'a, Sa'ada, and Hudaydah, leaving a number of people dead and injured. Yusuf Mauri joined us earlier from Sana'a to give us more updates on the Yemeni armed forces' success in downing of an American drone. Let's take a listen.
This is the 17th drone that has been shot down by the Yemeni armed and air defense forces, the second drone that has been shot down in the past 72 hours. What's clear from these counterattacks from Yemen is that they've managed to penetrate the system of the infamous MQ-9 Reaper drone that the U.S. uses to gather military intelligence, not just in Yemen, but across the Muslim world in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. In some parts of Africa, they use these drones to gather military intelligence. They use these drones to gather information so they can pick and locate military sites so that they can send their fighter jets that launch from their aircraft carriers in the Red Sea and, you know, from their military bases scattered throughout the entire region. All of these attacks are dependent on critical information that's provided by these MQ-9 drones. The reason why the U.S. has been unsuccessful in carrying out its military assault on military targets here in Yemen is because the MQ-9 hasn't been able to gather any military intelligence, at least not enough to identify and locate where the Ansar Allah movement is storing all of their weapons, their launching pads, their radars, their air defense systems. Because they have been shot down every time they fly over the skies of Yemen, whether that's in the north province of Sa'ada and Madib, in the central provinces of Al Bayda, in the western port of Hudaydah, these drones are being shot down.
Syrian Foreign Ministry condemns in the strongest terms the latest wave of Israeli attacks on the Arab country. The ministry called on the international community, including the UN, to pressure the regime to halt its aggression. The statement said the attacks are in violation of Syrian sovereignty and part of Israel's attempt to normalize violence against Damascus. Iran has also condemned the attack, calling on international organizations to take action and stop the Israeli aggression. On Wednesday, Israel carried out airstrikes targeting a defense research center in northern Damascus, as well as military airports in Hama and Homs provinces. Over a dozen people were killed in these attacks. Simultaneous with air raids, Israel's military vehicles started advancing in the Dahra countryside, pounding the area with artillery fire, leaving 9 people dead. Residents took up arms and clashed with Israeli forces after mosque in Dahra called for a general mobilization. Political commentator Leila Hatoum says the HDS government has allowed the Israeli regime to take over more Syrian territory without any fighting.
It's not, it's really funny to hear the foreign affairs minister of the new regime talk about Israelis trying to normalize violence against Syria. It has been ongoing. It's already normal. They are already used to it. The Israelis are trying to hit whatever is left of the Arab Syrian army arsenal so that it doesn't fall in the hands of other armed groups, not the HTS. The HTS has so far not fought the Israelis. It said it doesn't have the capabilities to fight the Israeli occupation. It has allowed the Israeli occupation to continue to take over more territories in Syria, reaching to the peripheries of Damascus, the capital. And recently we saw them take over also Rif Daraa, among other areas. So at the end of the day, it's really funny to hear that regime that refused to fight the Israelis or stop them at any point call upon the international community to tell the Israelis to uphold international law. I mean, what international law at the end of the day? They are breaching international law as much as the Israelis. Again, as I said, the Israelis fear that resistance pockets within Syria would reach certain research facilities that might have arms that would help them in fighting against the Gulani regime that has been protecting the Israelis for the past few months now, and at the same time attacking the Israelis.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps has released a statement on the anniversary of the Israeli attack on the Iranian embassy in Damascus. The IRGC condemned the strikes that led to the martyrdom of top IRGC commander Mohammad Reza Zaidi and several others. It said the U.S. and the Israeli regime's aggression in the region will not stop the annihilation of the regime. The statement said the myth of Israel's invisibility has been shattered following Al-Aqsa flood operation on October 7th. The IRGC said the axis of resistance will be the final victor of the current situation in West Asia. It also expressed hope that resistance groups in Gaza will liberate Al-Quds. President Donald Trump has imposed sweeping new tariffs on U.S. trading partners, a move that the European Union has labeled as a major blow to the world economy.
President Trump's announcement of universal tariffs on the whole world, including the European Union, is a major blow to the world economy. I deeply regret this choice. Let's be clear-eyed about the immense consequences. The global economy will massively suffer. Uncertainty will spiral and trigger the rise of further protectionism. The consequences will be dire for millions of people around the globe, also for the most vulnerable countries, which are now subject to some of the highest U.S. tariffs, the opposite of what we wanted to achieve.
The EU chief also said the bloc was prepared for further countermeasures to protect its interests and businesses if negotiations failed. Ursula von der Leyen emphasized that there is still an opportunity to address concerns through dialogue. China has also expressed firm opposition to tariffs on its export, pledging to take countermeasures. Beijing also criticized the measures as non-compliant with international trade rules that arm the legitimate rights and interests of the affected parties. Colombia and Australia criticized the U.S. for imposing new tariffs as well as vowing to take measures to protect their industries. Thank you so much for joining us. Bye for now. Thank you.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. In the limelight.
Even as independent evidence of Israeli regime crimes continues to mount, Western nations are content to consume anti-Palestinian propaganda. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, earlier this month, a special United Nations commission issued a report documenting Israel's systematic use of sexual, reproductive, and gender-based violence in the occupied Palestinian territories since October 7, 2023. This comes as the Zionist regime has renewed its all-out war on Gaza after a few weeks of calm, the first phase of a now-discarded ceasefire agreement. The deal was meant to permanently end the violence, complete the exchange of Israeli and Palestinian captives, and oversee the Zionist regime's withdrawal from Gaza. It has now been derailed. Crimes involving sexual violence have been just one part of Israel's genocide in Gaza, which has killed tens of thousands of people and decimated more than 80% of the territory's buildings. A few days before the UN report came out, we watched the American documentary October 8, which cited the baseless allegations that the resistance movement Hamas committed sexual violence during its 2023 Al-Aqsa Storm operation. The film, which focuses primarily on anti-Semitism on U.S. college campuses in the ensuing months, is undisguised propaganda. It endorses the Zionist regime's goal of exterminating Hamas, including through combat tactics that are widely seen as genocidal, targeting Gaza's entire civilian population. Yet, there is no equivalence in the scope of the allegations of sexual violence by the two warring sides, nor in their documentation. October 8 references the events of a single day, while the United Nations Commission covers the entire period since then. The first relies on largely unsubstantiated Israeli accusations, while the second stems from a diligent and objective evidence-gathering process that was largely ignored in the West. Indeed, access to information about Israeli criminality is filtered in the West by systematic self-censorship, undoubtedly induced, at least indirectly, by the broadly pro-Israel allegiances of Western governments. Wow. While October 8 was shown in 100 theaters across the U.S., despite being undisguised state propaganda, the more artistically motivated and dramatically enacted No Other Land was denied distribution in the country, even though it won an Oscar, the industry's highest acclaim. The bias extends to the television and print platforms, which is why the Western media took little notice of the UN's reliably documented account of the systematic sexual abuse of Palestinian detainees, while according to prominence, to unverified accounts of the mistreatment of Israeli hostages. These double standards in public discourse are often fueled by Western political leaders who parrot Israeli state propaganda and enforce strict curbs on pro-Palestinian expression and protest. This biased atmosphere helps us to understand why there is such a knowledge and awareness gap when it comes to Israeli regime criminality. Under international law, the Zionist regime is an occupying power, and as such, it is obliged by the Fourth Geneva Convention to protect the civilian population under its control. The convention stipulates that civilians shall in all circumstances be treated humanely without any adverse distinction founded on race, color, religion or faith, sex, birth or wealth, or any similar criteria. It specifically prohibits sexual violence and mass forcible transfers of an occupied population. The Zionist regime's mistreatment of Palestinians in the occupied territories stands in flagrant disregard of these intentional legal obligations. In Gaza, the Zionist regime's principal goal is to terrorize Palestinians, pushing them to leave their homes or face near certain death. The Zionist regime's motives are no longer couched in the language of security, but are now openly territorial. From the outset of its occupation of Gaza and the West Bank in 1967, the Israeli regime has defied international humanitarian law in numerous ways. This was amply documented in a near-unanimous advisory opinion of the International Court of Justice in July 2024, which addressed only the pre-October 7 violations. Significantly, the ICJ concluded that Israel has so fundamentally violated the Geneva Conventions that its occupation is thus unlawful, putting the UN and member states under an obligation to act accordingly. As the Zionist regime's genocidal assault on Gaza has continued month after month, the United Nations has noted a deliberate effort by the state to target Palestinian civilians. This has been exhibited through Israel's frequent bombing of residential structures and neighborhoods, and its reliance on high-yield explosives, making it difficult for civilians to seek refuge. These combat patterns have led to a disproportionate number of women and children dying. On the ground, Israeli regime forces are given carte blanche to carry out sadistic abuses of men and women, including prolonged and abusive strip searching, coercive interrogation, torture, and a variety of humiliating and harassing practices that enjoy tacit government approval. The Zionist regime's toleration of sexual violence against Palestinians, as described in this month's UN report, has been shocking, with top officials either dismissing such allegations as anti-Semitism or suggesting the abuse was justifiable retribution for the October 7th Al-Aqsa Storm operation. The UN report notes the statements and actions by political and civic leaders and the lack of effectiveness of the military judicial system send a clear message to Israeli forces that they can continue committing such acts without fear of accountability. This report makes a convincing case that sexual violence has been not only tolerated but encouraged by top Israeli regime officials. This dehumanization of the Palestinian people is closely linked with Israel's overt plan to forcibly transfer Gaza's civilian population, not for reasons of security, but to fulfill the Zionist mission of clearing the way for the establishment of Greater Israel as a Jewish supremacist state.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Mahdi Rastani.
We know that Ali had many characteristics that shined very bright. The reality is all of these characteristics at the end of the day came down to the worship of Ali and the relationship that he had built with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. There is no more ego left for Ali. This part we don't understand. This part we can't comprehend fully. There's no more ego left for Ali. Ego completely lost. This is a high standard. You and I just have to weaken that ego at least. Yes? That's what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala expects from us. But this is why his worship was the way it was. So Abu Darda, companion of the Prophet, he says, I was walking one night in the palm trees, heading home, and I heard someone crying in the middle of the night. Darkness of the night. I saw someone is crying. He says, I look closer. I said, huh, this is Ali, he's crying. I looked a little bit closer. I saw the way he's crying is a way that I've never cried myself. He's crying as if God is going to throw him into hellfire right now. We're going to talk more about why Ahl al-Bayt worship like this. He says, I listened to him, the way he was pleading to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the way he was talking to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, it was quite astonishing for me. He says, I continued to listen, all of a sudden I found the sound cut off. What happened to Ali? He said, I came closer, I saw Ali has fainted. I ran home to the house of Ali, knocked on the door to tell Fatima, salawatullahi wa salamu alayha. I went there to tell Fatima quickly, your husband, he fell on the ground, he's fainted, you have to come do something. He says, when I came and told Fatima, I said, he fainted. And Fatima said, yes, this is what happens to him every night. This is normal for Ali, because he faints out of what he sees of the beauty and the greatness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is the worship of Ali. There's no more ego left in this man. And so when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tells him, go left, he'll go left. Tells him, go right, go right. Go straight, go straight. It doesn't matter what God tells Ali. Because he's removed his ego, now everything is open. God just tells him what virtue he wants to see in him, and it's a done deal. That's it. And Ali continued on this. For you and I, if we can just weaken our ego, yes, through our worship. But with Ali, he went to the next step. He continued on this. This is why you find the narration says, when the time of Salat used to come, he would start in wudu, start to go pale. And they asked him, Ya Ali, why are you going pale? He said, I'm going to meet the one who gave me this opportunity of life. So he saw things you and I didn't see. And this is why Ali has that famous line that many of us have heard. He said, yes, people who worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, they are of three groups. Yes, we've heard this narration. He said, there are those who worship in the hopes of heaven. فَتَلْكَ عِبَادَةُ التُّجَّارِ. This is how the businessmen do worship. Yes? And he said, there are those who worship out of fear of hellfire. And I hope I'm in that category, because I know I'm not in any other category. He said, this is ibadatul abid. This is the worship of the servants, the people who are afraid of punishment, yes? And he said, there are those who worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for himself. And this is the worship of the special servants of God and the free servants of God. Ibadatul ahrar. But if you want to do that type of worship, that means you don't even have an ego left anymore. You don't even see yourself. So what do you see? You see God and you see him worthy of worship. That's it. And anytime you think you fall into this third category, I have bad news. More likely than not, we don't fall under this third category. The overwhelming majority of people who've ever lived and will ever live will not fall under this category. But Ali was in this category. And you see how beautiful it was. He was in this category and all the way at the top. So you find even other ma'sumeen, when they used to look at the ibadah of Ali, they used to look at it and wonder, how does Ali worship like this? So Imam al-Baqir, salawatullahi wa salamuhu alayhi, he says, I came to see my father one day. This is Zainul Abidin, yes? This is the one who is known for his worship. He says, I came and I walked in. The moment I walked in, I saw him. He had been worshiping for so long, his color had gone pale. And his legs were inflamed because he was standing for so long. And he had cried so much that his eyelids were somewhat wounded. He says, the moment I saw this, I was affected emotionally. This is such an emotional moment to see. He says, when I came and saw my father looked at me. He told me to be calm. And then he said, listen, I do all of this worship, but this is nothing compared to the worship of Ali. He said, go and bring those papers that are over there, those documents. I brought those documents. These are narrations about what Ali used to do from history. He looked at it and he said, you know, which one of us will be able to do what Ali did? This is the fourth Imam. And we look at that and we find this is extreme. Why does an Imam cry until a point where his eyelids are wounded and his legs are inflamed and all of this kind of stuff? Why would someone, we ask ourselves this, why would someone put themselves through this difficulty? Crying, worshiping like this. But when you're in that state of mind where your ego is completely gone, you don't even see yourself anymore. It's not so much trying to put yourself through that pain. It's just that you're worshiping. You're so in awe of this worship, this stuff naturally happens. This is the natural consequence of it. You want to understand, I'll give you an example. You can completely understand why Ahlul Bayt, when they used to worship, they have descriptions of it that seem extreme to us, and they are. But you'll understand their state of mind. I'll give you an example of someone who's not spiritual at all. Furthest thing from spirituality. The Quran tells us the story of Yusuf, no? And in the story of Yusuf, what happened? Zulaykha had that evil intention. She pushed for it. Yusuf ran. All of this kind of stuff. When everything came to an end, what happened? Zulaykha started to hear the chit-chat of the women, the other women in the city. They said, yes, Zulaykha's obsessed. And they started to blame her. Zulaykha has fallen in love with this person, this young man who's in her house. He's a servant for them. She's fallen in love with him and all this kind of stuff. And what did Zulaykha do? Zulaykha knew her stuff. Zulaykha pulled off a very beautiful plan. She said, okay, فَلَمَّا سَمِعَتْ بِمَكْرِهِنَّ When she heard, said, okay, you guys are going to talk about me like this? Let me give you a taste of what it's like being around Yusuf. فَلَمَّا سَمِعَتْ بِمَكْرِهِنَّ أَرْسَلَتْ إِلَيْهِنَّ Sent for him. Brought them. وَأَعْتَدَتْ لَهُنَّ مُتَّكَأً She prepared for them places where they could sit and pillows and so on and so forth. Comforters. This is a luxurious palace. وَأَعْتَدْ كُلَّ وَاحِدَةٍ مِّنْهُنَّ سِكِّينَ And he gave a knife. She gave a knife to each one of them. وَقَالَ تِخْرُجْ عَلَيْهِنَّ And Zulaykha said, Yusuf, go! And what happened when Yusuf walked out? All of a sudden, فَلَمَّا رَأَيْنَهُ أَكْبَرْنَهُ They saw Yusuf. They said, oh my God. قلنا حاشا لله. They said, no, this is not possible. ما هذا بشرة. This is not a human being. And then what does the Quran tell us? وَقَتَّعْنَا أَيْدِيَهُنَّ. Yes? They started to cut their own hands. If you are walking by a group of people and saw them cutting their hands, wouldn't you look at that and say, ah, this is extreme. What are you doing? Why would you hurt yourself like this? And what would the women of Egypt tell you? They will say, listen, you don't know what we're witnessing. We're not even acknowledging ourselves right now. We don't even understand what's happening. Our eyes are in awe of Yusuf. And hence we cut our hands. It's not that we want to cut our hands. It's that naturally our state of mind is somewhere else. We're so in awe, we don't even understand we're cutting ourselves. And this was a servant of God. So then Ali would come and witness of the beauty of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And then we say, why was his eyelids wounded? Why was he doing this? Baba, he doesn't see himself anymore. He doesn't cry to wound his eyelids. He cries and he's so much in awe that if the eyelids get wounded, if the knees get hurt, he doesn't even understand sometimes. This is the state of mind that they had. Yes, Ahlul Bayt are not expecting this kind of stuff from you and I. Ahlul Bayt are expecting very, very, very small from us. But they set the standard.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi Ali Hali Hakim Mati.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
The Limelight.
UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer told to be as robust as Canada with the US President as the UK stages last-ditch talks to strike a trade deal. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world press and news agencies to shed more light on the issue. Please stay with us. Guardian Daily writes, amid heightened fears that the US president could trigger a global trade war with devastating effects on the UK economy, senior UK and EU diplomats said on Saturday night, on March 29th, Keir Starmer should fight back strongly against Donald Trump if he imposes punitive tariffs on British exports. British government officials in London and Washington are working frantically these days to try to persuade Trump not to slap duties on more
key UK industries on what he is calling Liberation Day on Wednesday, April 2nd. The US president has already announced plans for 25% levies on imports of cars, steel, and aluminum to the US. One vital battleground now is over Washington's threat to impose blanket reciprocal 25% tariffs on all countries that impose value-added tax on U.S. exports. These countries include the U.K. and EU nations. The United States does not impose VAT on its imports. The Office for Budget Responsibility, OBR, warned recently that the 20% increase in tariffs between the United States and the rest of the world would cut U.K. growth by 1% and entirely eliminate £9.9 billion of fiscal headroom that the Chancellor of Exchequer, Rachel Reeves, restored in the public finances by a painful program of welfare and other cuts in her spring statement recently. Starmer appears to be waiting to judge how to react based on the level of any tariffs imposed on the UK. He is said by government officials to be ready to act in the national interest if Trump does hit the UK hard. But his team also says that he will be pragmatic if need to, suggesting he may not retaliate immediately in the hope of talking Trump around over time and with the aim of creating the conditions for signing a wider UK-US trade deal. Diplomats now say Starmer, who has refused to issue a word of criticism of Trump since his return to the White House, must be prepared to retaliate or run the risk that the U.S. president simply deploys the same tactic again and again, knowing his opponent will not fight back. Speaking to The Observer, the former UK ambassador to Washington, Kim Darroch, said Starmer should learn from the experience over recent days of the Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney, who appears to have softened Trump's tariff threat by warning of a strong Canadian retaliation and making clear his displeasure at the US president over his threats towards his country's sovereignty, an approach that has lifted his Liberal Party sustainability in the polls. Carney said it is clear that the United States is no longer a reliable partner. Lord Darroch said it's understandable that, faced with deeply damaging U.S. tariffs on British cars, steel and aluminum, the government should think about concessions like reducing digital tax. But they need to be wary of giving Trump wins. Tariffs are his all-purpose forcing mechanism, and he will use them again and again if he sees them working. And they should note the dramatic turnaround in Canadian politics, where on the back of a robust and defiant response to U.S. tariff threats, Mark Carney's Liberals have gone from 14 points behind the Canadian Conservative Party at the end of January to 8 points ahead last week. It is expected that Trump may impose less punitive tariffs on the UK than on member states of the EU, which he believes have taken an anti-US approach on trade over decades. João Valdo Almeida, former EU ambassador to the US and the UK, said he did not expect the UK to retaliate in the way the EU was bound to, but he said it was important that Starmer hit back in some way by criticizing the way the US president used tariffs as a tool of policy. Valdo Almeida said he, Starmer, should at least condemn the tariffs as they are bad for everyone. In her spring statement recently, Reeves, who is said to oppose retaliating to U.S. tariffs, said the global economy had become more uncertain, but at no point mentioned that it was Trump who had fueled the uncertainty and created the conditions in which a global trade war is now entirely possible. Carney, by contrast, has taken on Trump, telling him on Wednesday, March 26, that Canada would retaliate against the United States with tariffs of its own, potentially escalating a damaging trade conflict between the neighboring countries. An opinion poll for The Observer shows that after the spring statement, just 11% of UK voters expect the economy to improve over the next 12 months, with 23% saying it will stay the same and 61% that it will get worse. About 17% said they expected their finances to get better, 38% that they would stay the same, and 41% that they would get worse. Voters in this country rate with UK economy relatively poorly compared with large economic nations, particularly China. The UK economy is rated better than China's by just 9% of UK voters, with 10% saying it is about the same and 43% saying it is worse. Only 15% say the UK economy is better than that of the United States, with 16% saying it is about the same and 36% saying it is worse. Meanwhile, The Independent reports Keir Starmer has been warned against appeasing Donald Trump as he considers reducing a major tax for U.S. tech companies while cutting disability benefits and public sector jobs. His chancellor, Rachel Reeves, confirmed on Sunday, March 23rd, that there were ongoing discussions about the UK's £1 billion a year digital services tax that affects companies including Meta and Amazon. She expressed optimism that Trump's 25% tariffs on British steel could be removed in any deal, but did not deny there could be changes to the digital services tax, which the United States has lobbied against. She said, "You've got to get the balance right." While any changes didn't take place in her recent spring statement, the Liberal Democrats warned Labour was in danger of losing its moral compass, and it would be tantamount to robbing disabled people to appease Elon Musk and Trump. Labour MPs are already on the brink of rebellion over £5 billion of welfare cuts to disability benefits, and trade unions are concerned about £2 billion of Whitehall cuts, leading to about 1,000 civil service job losses, plus the risk of redundancies in arms-length bodies and local governments. The Labour MP and former Shadow Cabinet Minister Rachel Maskell said, with the Chancellor saying that she's still looking at the digital services tax, then I would be concerned if relief was granted in what would be seen as a dash to let the United States tech companies off the hook, while at the same time as making disabled people pay for their revenue loss, with their lifelines being cut. She said, "I recognize that the Chancellor has to rebuild the economy, but who pays for these matters, and it must never be the poorest in our society, which will be the outcome should the Department for Work and Pensions proposals go through." Clive Lewis, the Labour MP and another former Shadow Cabinet Minister, said, "This was entirely predictable given how desperate the government is to appease the Trump administration and tech oligarchs around it," adding, "This is extractive politics at its worst, and exactly the kind of deal the MAGA Make America Great Again movement wants. Rather than move closer to Europe and stand together, we are allowing ourselves to be ripped off." He said it was an abject surrender even before the government chooses tax cuts for big U.S. tech and austerity for the most vulnerable, adding, "Frankly, it's unacceptable."
have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. Or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a number of distinguished reciters of the Holy Quran in a gathering titled Communion with the Holy Quran. This meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on the first day of the blessed month of Ramadan, March 2nd, 2025. The recitation of these verses leads to purification. What does purification mean? It means a healing of the soul and heart. That is the meaning of purification. The human heart, spirit, and soul are healed of those ailments I mentioned earlier. This is what purification means. The Quran does this. The recitation of the Quran purifies. I may not be able to properly describe for you the immense joy and happiness I feel when I see different reciters coming together to read the Quran, both with proper tajweed and with correct pauses and starts, along with a beautiful, accurate articulation of the letters. This is truly remarkable. It's very good. The more widespread this becomes, such gatherings, the better. In any case, tartil, in the sense that I have mentioned, is a prerequisite for our recitations to be effective. The third point is that the reciter's goal in their recitation should primarily be to benefit themselves. When you recite the Quran, your primary intention should be to benefit yourself. Next, Your aim should be to benefit your audience. Third, use the necessary stylistic and vocal embellishments appropriate for the Quran. These embellishments, a good voice, a pleasant tone, and the good styles that reciters employ aren't a problem. Fortunately, we see among our reciters those whose recitations are broadcast on television or elsewhere, which I occasionally have the opportunity to see, that many of their recitations and melodic tones aren't copied from others. They are tones that they are creating. In the past, during the early days of revolution, our reciters had to imitate one of the famous Egyptian reciters such as Abdul Basit, Mustafa Ismail, Minshawi, or others like them. But today I see that this is no longer the case. Of course, there's nothing wrong with imitation. In other words, if someone imitates a voice, the tone of a skilled reciter, learns that tone and imitates it, there's nothing wrong with that. And it's perfectly fine.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I wanna thank you for bringing me home.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heaven.